and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, presenting Beauty and the Beast from Wednesday, July 6th through Sunday, July 17th. Nominated for 9 Tony Awards, Beauty and the Beast is based on the Disney Academy Award-winning animated feature film. Ticket information is available at 1-888-261-9675.
Welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls. In this hour of the show, we will be doing a health topic, something we have done every year at about this time, at least in the summer for a long time now. We'll be talking about the back and care of the back. And our guest is Dr. James Harms from Carl Clinic. He's an orthopedic surgeon, and he's been good enough now year after year to answer our invitation here in the summertime to come here and talk and also to answer questions. It's one of those areas that we picked out as being something we should do at least once a year because we knew that there would always be questions because there will always be people who have back pain. And if you have a question, have some concern, I know that he'll do his best to help you out, at least add some information. Obviously, we cannot do diagnosis over the telephone. I try to say that when we have doctors here on the show. There are some limits to what we can do in this format. And if you have real concerns, obviously you need to pursue that with someone who can see you. But this is a place to start to accumulate some basic information and perhaps ask some questions, and we're happy to do that. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Good morning. It's good to be here again.
Let me just do a little
microphone adjustment here and get that a little closer there.
How about that?
It's fine with me.
That's better. One of the things I think probably I have asked you to do, I'll bet I've asked you to do this every time, is to talk a little bit about the structure of the back. And it seems to me that in doing that, it maybe helps people understand a little bit better what some of the sources of back pain are and what some of the problem areas are. So maybe we could start and you could just do your standard lecture on the structure of the back.
Good topic. Yes, the spine, of course, keeps the head off of the ground. It is an anchor for the arms and legs indirectly through the shoulder girdle and pelvis. It bears weight, so it has to be structurally solid, but it allows motion, so there has to be some flexibility. There are muscles that support the spine. There are discs alternating with bones called vertebral bodies in the front of the spine. And in the back of the spine, there are joints called facet joints. In the center of the spine is a spinal canal where the nerves and the spinal cord run. When things are going well, particularly when we're young, before aging and wear and tear begin, we usually have no symptoms whatsoever. As we get older, the discs can age prematurely. My theory is you ought to have perfect health until you're 100 and then fall into a pile of dust. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work that way. If our discs are aging prematurely, we sometimes get no symptoms. On the other hand, it can sometimes cause backache with activity. If the joints in the back of the spine have premature aging, that's called arthritis. And arthritis would cause soreness and stiffness when in one position for a long time. So if you get up in the morning and the first couple steps are difficult, if you're riding in a car and you go to get out and it takes you a while to straighten up, that would be arthritis. If the arthritis is bad, spurs can form and grow into that central spinal canal where the nerves and spinal cord run and put pressure on the nerves or spinal cord. That would give leg pain, weakness, or numbness, usually with standing and walking that's relieved by sitting. That would be called spinal stenosis. If your discs are aging before their time, sometimes you can get a crack in the disc, and through that crack, some of the soft center disc material can come out and rub on a nerve. That's called a herniated disc. So there are muscles that can have problems in the back also, although usually if a person is feeling it in the muscles, it's a problem down deep with the arthritis or the degenerative disc disease or the herniated disc that's being felt in the area where those nerves go out to the muscles. So that's the short course in anatomy of the spine.
Okay. Is there some common list of things that can contribute to or lead to premature aging of the discs?
Of course. The number one thing is genetics. If there's a family history of back problems, the odds are that you're at risk of getting it too. We know that people that are more than 20% over ideal weight have a higher incidence of back problems. We know that people who are cigarette smokers are at greater risk of having back events. We know that people that are very sedentary, particularly those that spend more than an hour and a half a day in a vehicle, have more problems. We know that people who are over 6'4", people who don't get regular exercise, are at greater risk. Now, these are associations. They're not necessarily cause and effect, but most of us are very suspicious that there is a causal relationship.
Mm-hmm. So that would suggest if you want to keep your back healthy, there are certain things you can do along the lifestyle line. You can't do anything about your genetics, but if you smoke, you can quit. You can get some regular exercise. You can just keep in mind all of those things that you can do, things you can do for the muscles that support the spine, which I guess goes back to the idea of exercise and particular kind of exercise, that can make it keep your back a little bit healthier and reduce the chances of you're having a problem.
Well, you hardly need me here after that little vignette. Yes, indeed. If one keeps the abdominal and back muscles strong, in theory, those structures, those muscles will absorb more of the load and less of the force will be transmitted down to the sensitive ligament, bone, or disc. Just like the dentist tells people they have to brush their teeth, I give little commercials about weight, exercise, cigarette smoking whenever I see a person in the office. So those are important things. And in today's environment, most people want to know what they can do themselves to improve their situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, for people who in their occupation, an awful lot of people now who spend a lot of time sitting at desks and looking at computer screens, maybe some of the people who spend a lot of time driving, maybe they have long commutes, maybe they drive professionally. But for all of those people whose job involves sitting for long periods of time, what can you tell them that they can do?
We do have a little booklet called Back Tips that has hints for people that have to sit and have back problems. So certainly education as to the best way to sit without too much pressure behind the thighs can be helpful. We know that people that are in an office situation can get up and walk around, go to the bathroom, go to the water cooler, find some excuse to change positions frequently. If you're a long-haul truck driver, that's a problem. And we think that if you balance it with regular exercise, that can counteract or minimize the effects of the sitting.
Yeah. I'm sure that there are probably some people who would, if they experience at some point back pain, they have something they can associate it with. Working in the garden, digging, shoveling snow, lifting things that are heavy. How much can attention to proper body mechanics when you're doing physical work like that? How far can that go to, again, preventing problems?
All of us like to know a cause. We like to know why something happens to us, and it's very frustrating not to know why. I try to inform people that they bent over to tie their shoes and that did not cause their back problem, even though the pain started at that time. There was an underlying abnormality and the repair process was unable to keep up with the aging process and they became symptomatic. I sometimes even use the phrase, your bending over was the straw that broke the camel's back, so to speak. Because it's maybe a fraction of 1% of the cause, and there's an underlying problem. But if they bend with their knees, in the example that you've given, instead of their back, when doing things, that is less stressful on the lumbar spine. So there are hints that will be helpful, but not reverse what aging they've had, just minimize the symptoms they will get in the future.
Mm-hmm. Any, just real quick here, maybe ask one more question, and I have a couple of calls we'll get to. Is there anything along the nutritional line that is likely to make a difference one way or another? Or if people are getting basic nutrition, it's not going to make very much difference if they supplement certain things?
The problem in our current environment is the opposite. There's too much nutrition. And we think that exactly the same risk factors for heart disease are the risk factors for back problems. So if you tend to get too many calories in, you get arterial sclerosis, and that can interfere with the circulation to the heart. We also think that because the disc itself does not have much in the way of direct circulation, that anything that decreases the circulation, such as arterial sclerosis, can put a person at greater risk of back problems. In terms of vitamins, unless you have a gross vitamin deficiency, it shouldn't make any difference. Glucosamine and chondroitin seem to work best on shoulder joints, hip joints, knee joints, and not so good on the spine, although occasionally I do have a patient that says it makes a difference for them.
Okay. We have a couple of callers here. We'll get right to it. Our guest here this morning in this hour of Focus 580, Dr. James Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon from Carl Clinic. And if you have questions about the back, you can give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We'll start with someone listening this morning in Indiana on line four. Hello.
Hello. If you could you give sort of, you know, a lecture on herniated disc? A long, long time ago when I first got out of school and went to apply for a job, I was turned down by the doctor because after the x-ray, they said I had a herniated disc. I ended up getting hired anyway because I was going to work in the lab and not be regular labor where I'd have to, you know, lift a lot of things. And just, you know, in the last number of years since that time, every once in a while I'll get a, like, you know, it's commonly called a pinch in the nerve, and I always associated that with that previous diagnosis, and I've never had what you say debilitating pain or anything like that. I've had some that have lasted a while, and that it seemed like if I sat in a position or got out and moved around or went out and walked a half mile or something along that line, things would improve, and eventually, you know, the pain would go away. I just wondered if there's any, you know, in terms of exercises, things not to do, things to do, or diet or something like that, that has any association with the herniated disc that would make it better or, you know, give me a warning sign that I better get to see something be done about that part of the back. Thanks.
Well, that's a good question. If a person has a herniated disc, and in your case, you're talking about the lower back, so let's concentrate there, it means that the covering of the disc called the annulus, which is like gristle on meat, got a crack in it, and through that crack, some of the soft center disc material that's the consistency of crab meat has come out, and it's displacing a nerve. Classically, a herniated disc will not give you back pain. It only gives you leg pain, weakness, or numbness. So if you had those symptoms, there's a fair chance that you did have a herniated disc. Now, in the medical profession, many of us throw around that term when there's not really pressure on the nerve. Sometimes there is just inflammation going out into the nerves that causes symptoms. If those chemicals or inflammation leak out into the spinal canal through microscopic holes in the disc and go into the small nerves that go to the muscles of the back, it gives back pain. If those chemicals leak into the large nerves that come out the back and go down the leg, it can give leg symptoms, even in the absence of pressure on the nerves. Also, I need to warn you that a herniated disc diagnosis cannot be made from a plain x-ray. It takes a CAT scan, MRI, or a CAT scan myelogram to make that diagnosis. It sounds like you've had episodes of degenerative disc disease flare up that you're feeling like it's a pinched nerve. So, yes, it's probably related to your initial flare up or problem, and your back is continuing to age with time. It sounds like you've already figured out the right things to do. You're asking about exercise, particularly walking. You found that walking helps. Exercise is the best thing to help with a problem such as yours. Ideally, you'd be doing a few minutes of flexibility exercises a day. Ideally, you'd be doing a few minutes of keeping your abdominal and back muscles strong type of exercises per day. And you'd be doing something for your cardiovascular fitness 3 to 6 times a week, such as walking 2 to 3 miles. Many of us, as we get a disc aging prematurely, also get a little arthritis in our back. And if you're sitting for a while and go to get up and it takes you a while to straighten up, if you get stiff and sore, that's probably the arthritis. And again, regular exercise is the best thing to do. people in your situation often have their symptoms made worse by suddenly increasing their activities. So if you're going to go skiing tomorrow, for the last week or so, you probably should have been doing some stretching exercises and some strengthening exercises for your back. If you're going to be inactive for a long time, like if you're riding on an airplane to Australia, you'll want to get up and walk around, find an excuse to go to the bathroom. You'll want to stretch. Anything you can do to change positions would be helpful. We already mentioned keeping weight within 20% of ideal, not taking up cigarette smoking, doing things in the way that's best for the back. Those are the generalizations I would give from the information you've provided.
All right, hope that helps. Let's talk with someone else. Here, this caller is in Mawiqua on line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Thank you. Good morning, doctor. I just learned a lot from the previous caller there. May have the same thing. When I was 18, I hurt my back water skiing and had some problems since. And I was wondering, and every morning I get up, my back hurts, okay? And within 15 minutes of just, you know, light walking or whatever, the pain recedes and I have a pretty normal day. I suppose that's fairly easily answered. That must be muscle. Is that correct?
Well, I think you're feeling it in the muscle, but with your history, I suspect it's coming from some of the facet joints in the back of the spine that have arthritis.
Okay.
When we're 18 years old, we think we're immortal, and I know that when I was just a little older than that, I was water skiing with the tow rope handle in my mouth, and it really freaked out my wife such that she had to get off the boat and go do something else. But my back's not been hurt from that. However, if you rapidly bent or twisted your spine, if you bent it too much, you probably injured the cartilage in the joints in the back of the spine.
I think you've got it. Yes. I held onto the rope too long and then it lunged me out of the water and I was bent over severely.
So I think that you've got some post-traumatic arthritis in your back because your history is just classic. When getting up in the mornings, you have your problem.
Yes.
Aleve, ibuprofen, any of the arthritis medications can help it. And if you do 1 or 2 minutes of stretching exercises before you get out of bed in the morning, I'll bet that would jumpstart you.
Oh, very good. Thank you. One more thing. I was a down lineman in football. I heard that's bad. And it hasn't happened in a while, but for a while it was very frequent, and I had a foot drop in my right foot, and that might give you some history, too. And thank you for the call, and I hope you didn't injure your teeth with the ski rope.
My dentist is happy to this day, but it wasn't because of that.
Okay, good.
Anyway, now,
if you could comment on the foot drop, and thank you very
much. Yes, I will. It's interesting because I've talked with our sports medicine people about taking a college football team and doing MRIs on all of them before they entered school, and then when they graduated, do another MRI. And my sports medicine friends tell me that there's no university that would let that study take place. The wear and tear on the body for football, not just the back, but many joints, is pretty impressive. The gains that one gets by learning self-discipline, by being part of a team, by being in good condition, outweigh the injuries for most people. But it can cause the spine to age more rapidly than usual. When you had your foot drop, there's a good chance that was coming from the back, particularly if you had back pain at the same time. If one gets a herniated disc or disc bulge at the second to the bottom disc, L4, L5, that gets the L5 nerve root that comes out the back, joins three other nerves in the buttock region to form the sciatic nerve, goes down to about the knee and splits into two nerves. One of those nerves goes down and supplies the muscles that bring the foot up. And I'll bet you had pressure on the nerve, but you're one of those 80% where your body sent in white blood cells that secreted enzymes and digested that piece of disc, and you got better on your own. So I'm glad you didn't panic. I'm glad that you waited it out, and it sounds like it had a reasonably happy ending.
All right. We have a caller here on line number two. It says on my screen that they're calling from the clinic. So I'm not sure who this would be, but we'll go right there. Line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, Dr. Harms, I was wondering if you could define sciatica for me and when you actually diagnose patients with that.
Yes, Ms. Searson, I'd be happy to. You have asked about sciatica, which is what most people think of as low back pain.
Right.
If one has a problem with back pain, in the non-medical parlance, that would be sciatica. Actually, sciatica refers to a very specific pain in the back of the thigh that goes down below the knee. Classically, that's associated with pressure on a nerve in the lower back from either a spur poking on the nerve or a herniated disc. It
okay.
can also be from a fracture or a tumor, but that's a lot less common.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right. Thanks for the is this stump the doctor? Is that what we got going on here?
Is this what?
Stump the doctor?
No. I was very curious to know.
Okay. All right.
Thank
very good.
You.
Well, thanks for the call. Other questions are welcome. Our guest here, Dr. Jim Harms, is orthopedic surgeon at Carr Clinic. We're talking about the back and care of the back. And if you want to give us a call, you can do that. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Are there photos of you skiing with the tow rope in your teeth?
This is an urban legend. There is no proof whatsoever that this ever took place.
Oh, I see now. Even the subject is calling into question the whole story. Well, we'll have to do some investigation. Let's talk with someone in Champaign here next, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a question about static electricity working. I know I have found out if I rub my knees, which have arthritis and I have trouble getting up, but if I gently rub them, before I get up, I can get up and walk with no problem. And that reminded me of the time when I had back trouble. I went to a chiropractor, and before I went in there, one of the women rubbed my back. And all of a sudden, the pain was gone. I guess that's static electricity, too, maybe. What do you think about that?
Well, for many years, why people had pain and what relieved it was a puzzle. And about 20 years ago, there was a theory put forward called the gate theory of nerve transmission. The information that reaches your brain is a combination of all the positive signals and negative signals that come through your nerves and spinal cord. Obviously, if you're in pain, that's a negative signal. It is thought that if you can send up a neutral or a positive signal, that can close the gate on the nerve pathways and can interrupt the pain signals. So when you have a problem with knee pain and you rub the knees, that may be sending I'm warm, I'm happy signals up to the spinal cord to block some of those negative signals. You may be a very skin-sensitive individual, so that if someone rubs your back, that can help your backache. Most of us, that doesn't work. We need heat or ice. We need something else to interrupt those signals. But what you're describing does not seem too surprising. I don't think I'd blame static electricity. I think I would instead say the nerves are sending signals to the spinal cord because of the rubbing, because of the heat, because of the touch that's doing this.
Okay, thank you. That's really interesting.
You're welcome. Interesting question.
Well, that, again, it certainly makes me think about those over-the-counter products that you can get to rub onto spots that are sore that makes it feel like you're putting heat on them. And I've always wondered, well, but it's not true. It may be producing that feeling, but it's not the same as if you actually put heat on. If you put a heating pad on, what is it that it's doing? And does it have actually some therapeutic effect, or does it actually just make you feel better in some way? And you feel better. Maybe it's a matter of you're fooling yourself that in fact that it's having some therapeutic effect.
I don't know. If my back hurts and I take ibuprofen, I don't care whether I'm fooling myself or whether the ibuprofen is doing it. All I care is that I can get back to living my life. So I think it may be an artificial distinction. But the gate theory of pain does explain what could be physically and neurologically going on to make a difference. Now, there is one exception, and that's a capsaicin cream. That may directly affect the nerves as it's absorbed into the skin and down deeper.
Mm.
But
so that's,
in general, the gait theory is a good one to explain what's going on.
That's the stuff that has the active ingredient from hot chilies.
Hot peppers,
hot
yes,
peppers
indeed.
In it. Okay, not to be confused with something like Bengay, and I'm not exactly sure how that works, but it does. You put that stuff on, and it does give you this sensation of heat
yes.
in the place where you put it on.
Yes, indeed.
Mm. Okay, to next caller. This will be Champagne and Line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
I have a question. I'm not sure if it's really related to the back, but I'll throw it out there. I am a long-distance biker and a runner, and there is occasion where I will have a tingling at the bottom of my foot with two of my toes that go numb. It happens while I bike and while I run, and I'm just, I always run through it and comes back after a while, but I was wondering if you think it's if it's generating in the back or down in the heel.
Good question. In fact, you've hit the two spots where it's most likely to be coming from. Obviously, it can come from a back. Suppose you have a disc aging before its time or a little arthritis, and when you do any too much of one thing, too much of the force is centered on that area and irritates the nerve. The next possibility is that you've got a minor abnormality in the foot and that the nerve is being irritated in the foot itself. If you were looking at lower probability causes, you might think that there could be a problem with the nerve itself somewhere in the leg. As long as it's going away and it's a very temporary thing, I would just continue my biking and my running.
Okay.
If you needed to diagnose it, you might visit a neurologist, a medical nerve doctor, who could test you out in some more detail. A podiatrist could look at your foot if you thought it was really the foot. But I wouldn't be surprised with as minor as your symptoms are that nobody's going to be able to diagnose it very well.
Okay. And would you expect or should I guess I should say I really don't plan on stopping, but would there be an expected long-term permanent damage to that, or do nerves tend to fix themselves? Do they regenerate? Do they?
Yes to all your questions. The nerve, in your case, is merely irritated. There's no permanent change in it. If the numbness comes and goes, that's an irritation. If the numbness comes and stays, then that means that there's been some actual physical change in the nerve. If all you get is that numbness and it doesn't progress and you can live with it, fine. If you are curious about the diagnosis, then if it does become present all the time, investigation would be warranted with either a podiatrist or a neurologist.
Okay.
Nerves can repair themselves. Nerves do regenerate, even sometimes after they're cut. So all those were yeses.
Well, I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Enjoy the
Let's
afternoon.
Go on here to Crete, line number 4. That's the next person here. Hello.
Yeah, my wife suffered some severe back pain, and we found out that arthritis has really gotten to her, and she needs double hip replacement surgery in the next few months. We hear more and more about hip resurfacing. And we were wondering what would be the conditions or the situations and circumstances that would foreclose or counterindicate that kind of hip resurfacing for her.
It's often difficult to tell when a problem is coming from the back or the hip or even the sacroiliac joint because the pain can be in the buttock region, the very lower back, the sacral region. If a person has a hip problem, twisting the leg generally reproduces the problem. If a person has a back problem, then twisting the leg generally doesn't aggravate the situation. Your wife has been diagnosed with arthritis of the hip, and many things have been tried over the years to help people. Certainly when I was in training, the total hip procedure was just coming to the forefront. 10, 15, 20 years ago, the resurfacing became popular. The resurfacing lost popularity and is now resurfacing. Resurfacing is resurfacing again. The patient who has bad changes on X-ray in the pelvis at the socket part called the acetabulum would not be a candidate for resurfacing. A person where the femoral head, the top of the thigh bone that goes into that socket, is abnormal, but the acetabular part is normal, would be a candidate for resurfacing. You'll have to choose an orthopedic surgeon that you trust and go by that surgeon's judgment coupled with your wife's wishes.
You say that hip resurfacing is making a comeback. Is that basically your bottom line?
Yes, sir.
What do you feel about the mini versus maxi surgery?
Again, it depends on your surgeon's preference. In the days gone by, an 8 to 12-inch incision was made along the side of the hip in order to put in a hip replacement. There is an increasing popularity in a so-called mini hip or mini approach where smaller incisions are made to take out the top part of the thigh bone and put in a combination metal and plastic piece. Now, that's a little out of the back area, but it is an interesting topic.
So do you think the doctors are now aware of the resurgence of hip resurfacing, or is that sort of passe for many of them?
Well, most of the physicians don't run research programs, and they're not going to be doing that at the present time. But there are companies that are supporting research on resurfacing again, and you might have your wife get into one of those studies. On the other hand, you might have to travel quite a distance, and if you've got a competent orthopedic surgeon in your area, it's best to stay close to home where your wife's support system already exists.
Would you describe once again the factor that would foreclose the hip resurfacing again? Would you give that to acetate or whatever the word was?
When the hip is resurfaced, only the femur part, the ball part of the ball and socket joint, is replaced. So if the socket part is diseased with arthritis badly, a resurfacing is contraindicated. You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Our guest this morning is Dr. Jim Harms. He's an orthopedic surgeon from Carl Clinic. We're talking about the back. And if you have questions, you can give us a call, 333-WILL or 9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Back here to the local area here, a caller in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Harms.
Good morning.
It's been 2 years since you put me back together after crashing a horse in June of 2003, and thankfully everything is working normal, and I'm able to return to marathoning and triathloning and riding horses and everything else.
I love happy endings.
It's very, very happy. I have just absolutely no side effects whatsoever. A little stiffness occasionally, but I get regular massages, and everything's working fabulously.
Now, that's unusual. You must be exercising, too.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I think you get a lot of the credit.
Well, my question is long-term. What can I expect? Obviously, marathoning is pretty hard on the body. I don't anticipate doing that for the rest of my life. But are there things I should start thinking about avoiding or things that I should just be aware of as I, you know, get older? And I obviously have rods in my back, so I need to take care of this situation. And I'm not the average normal person now.
You were probably never the average normal person. You're a high-performance athlete, and high-performance athletes demand more of their bodies, but the rewards are also greater. I think that there will come a time when impact-loading activities will be harder for you than they are now. But if you keep your weight reasonable, if you do stretching exercises, if you keep your abdominal and back muscles strong, those are the kind of things that you can do to minimize future problems. I see lots of patients who come in the office who have terrible-looking x-rays, and they've always had chronic pain. I have patients who have exactly the same terrible-looking x-rays come into my office who say, gee, it didn't bother me until last week. And the difference between those two groups is the second person was an exercise nut where the first person was not. So I applaud you for your regular exercise. Find a way to stick with it, and that's what you can do.
Wonderful. I agree totally. Can I expect any increased chances of arthritis or anything in the areas around the rods?
Yes and no. In the area of the rods, you had a spinal fusion, so those joints are gone. If the joints are gone, you cannot get arthritis. On the other hand, when your body absorbed enough energy to break the bone, some of the surrounding joints probably absorb some of that energy also, and probably are more prone to a little post-traumatic arthritis, just like I talked about earlier with the 18-year-old who had, well, he's a little more than 18 now, but when he was 18, he had the ski accident. So yes, you're a little more prone to arthritis. And again, regular exercise is exactly the right thing to do.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. On again, line number two, and this is Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
It is less than a year that I have a kind of back pain that after I do a little, you know, I'm just doing something, suddenly it gets so sore that I couldn't stand on my foot. And it is not, of course, low back. It's a kind of higher back, and I don't know what causes that.
Just like the lower back can have discs that age before their time, just like the lower back can have arthritis, your upper back can get the same type of condition. The area around the chest is a little less prone to that, but the neck is very commonly involved with the same type of symptoms as the lower back. Now, as one gets older, particularly if one is a female, thin, white, cigarette smoker, one can get osteoporosis, and you could even be having fractures of your back. Mm-hmm. I think that it would be wise for you to consult a physician on this one. I don't really feel that I can get enough information over the phone mm-hmm. to help you with this one.
Okay, but a neurologist or what?
I think you should start with your primary care doctor first and mm-hmm. let your primary care doctor know that you're having these pains. Mm-hmm. An exam will be done. An x-ray will be taken. Mm-hmm. If there's some question as to whether it's a fracture or very small fractures called microfractures, mm-hmm. your doctor may even want you to go through a bone density mm-hmm. study to check for osteoporosis.
Thanks a lot.
I happen to think that every female over the age of 40 should be doing weight-bearing exercise, make sure they've got enough calcium and vitamin D on board, and if there's a family history of osteoporosis, should talk to their primary care doctor about the possibility of bone hormones.
Thank you. I usually do exercise every day, and also take some 600 milligram calcium every day, and I drink milk and those. But thanks a lot. I will do that.
Sounds like you're doing most of the right things, but I'd be more comfortable if you'd check in with your primary care doctor.
Thanks a lot.
All right,
you're welcome.
For the call. One thing, I have a couple callers here, and we'll get to them, but one thing I would like to give you the opportunity to talk a little bit about is potentials for disc replacement. I guess ideally for the disc, we know that the discs will eventually wear out, and in some people that happens sooner, some people that happens later, but you would think that in the perfect world, what you would like to be able to do as a surgeon is if you have a person who's got the damaged disc and it's giving people pain, to go in there and give them something new, put in a replacement. What sort of potential is there for that? Or perhaps, you know, we might want to talk more generally about dealing with the problems of degenerating discs.
All of us have degenerating discs once we reach age 18, and some of us start even in childhood. Many of us have no symptoms from that whatsoever. So we really don't need to think of a procedure for those people that aren't having symptoms. Mm-hmm. Also, most people with degenerating discs, maybe 70%, would be greatly helped by an exercise program. So again, we want to try those non-invasive things first. However, total disc replacement has been done in Europe for 20 years. There have been some problems with it. It's decent now. And there are three companies in the United States that are working on bringing those to market. Last November, one company did get approval from the FDA. There are very few insurance companies, certainly not Medicare or Medicaid, that cover that. So right now, you pretty much have to be on an investigational protocol or have big bucks in your pocket to have that done. Surgeons such as myself are slowly being accepted into training courses to do a disc replacement. A disc replacement is a metal top, a metal bottom that goes into and hooks onto the bone from the front, go through the front of the spine, through the abdomen. and then there's a plastic spacer or ball in the middle that allows motion. Those appear to be doing very well in the 2 to 5 years they've been done in this country. Obviously, there's a larger follow-up in Europe. Currently, there's even a more attractive product that's being investigated where a small gel-like pad is put into the disc space from the back, the traditional herniated disc surgery approach. Once that gel pack gets into the center of the disc, it imbibes or absorbs water and forms a new cushion in the center of the disc. Many of us find that very attractive theoretically. Also, gene therapy is being investigated as a possibility to regenerate discs. In animals, certain cells are taken out of the disc. They're messed with genetically and then injected back into the disc to regenerate new disc material. So there are a lot of exciting things being done at the present time. Mm-hmm.
Then, though, if you're not going to do that, is the best alternative if the disc is to the point where there's really nothing you can do with it to, in a sense, take the two vertebrae, those on either side, and join them together, in effect, making one piece and simply taking the joint out?
Yes. In fact, if a person has incapacitating backache, not regular backache, but incapacitating, if they've failed 6 months of an exercise program, they become a candidate for the traditional operation, the gold standard operation, if you will, which is a spinal fusion. The body likes motion, but with the help of the surgeon, by putting bone chips along the side of the spine, most often hardware in the spine as well, the patient grows the area into one solid piece so that it no longer generates severe pain. Spinal fusion.
What's your take now? Because there have been a lot of concerns raised about the long-term use of pain medication. What sort of recommendations are you making to your patients?
That's a real tough question to answer in a couple of minutes. Suffice it to say that narcotics are not a good solution for chronic back pain. And in fact, 1/3 of the patients who are on narcotics for chronic back pain, if they get off the narcotics, they actually feel better. We think that the chronic narcotics interfere with the body's ability to adjust to painful stimuli and dampen them down. Arthritis medications are the ones that have been getting the most press recently. And I think that any of the arthritis medications have risks and benefits. For short term, I don't have a problem with it. If it's me, I'm taking my ibuprofen and I'm not suffering if I don't have to. On the other hand, any drug that's taken long term can have bad effects, and the risk and benefits need to be balanced by the patient with the advice of the prescribing physician. Mm-hmm. But in general, it's just unfortunate that there have been so many articles in the press about all the negative effects of medications, and we don't hear all the good that they've done for many people over many years.
All right. Let's get back to the phones here. We'll talk with someone in, I believe, in Urbana on our line number 3 right here. Hello.
Yes. Good morning.
Yes.
I know that Carl has support groups and therapy groups, but is there a group that does back exercises that you could get into without having injured your back if you're short on the self-discipline that's required for exercise?
Well, that's most of us that are short on that self-discipline. Yes, indeed. Through physical therapy, there are exercise programs available. There are pool exercises. There are exercise equipment that people can come in and use at certain times. Those are possibilities.
What is the route to get to that?
Call the physical therapy department at Carl.
Okay.
If there is not a program that suits your needs, then get 10 of your friends together, have them all call in and say, we need this program set up. We'd like a physical therapist to walk by every 10 minutes and give us some instruction on what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. And we're going to sign up for 6 months because there may not be the exact program you want, but if there's the demand, it'll happen.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. To Matt Toon next for another caller. Line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I would like for you to comment a little bit on sciatica. I've had, from heavy lifting and garden work, I've had an attack of sciatica that the lower left side, I can actually feel a little point. It seems like it's pinching the nerve, and I've tried ibuprofen for a week, and it didn't seem to do much good, and I seem to get more relief just from sitting or laying down and lifting my leg and drawing it toward me occasionally. That exercise seems to help some, and I've been told that if just let it go and tough it out, within a few weeks it'll probably cure itself.
Yes, indeed. You have a very common problem that many of us have. In theory, sciatica refers to leg pain and not back pain, but the word is used interchangeably by physicians and non-physicians alike. I think that you've got a combination of arthritis in your back and degenerative disc disease, and when you overload your back, when you do something you're not used to, when you do an activity that you don't do every day, too much of the force is transmitted down to the sensitive area, it gets inflamed, and it tells you that you've had enough. Ibuprofen's a good choice, but it doesn't work for everybody. You need to make sure you're on a therapeutic dose, though. The bottle says take 2 tablets every 4 hours or sometimes 6 hours, and to get that medication over the counter, the label actually halved the therapeutic dose. So for a person my size, which is 190 pounds, I would need to take 4 tablets with lunch, 4 tablets with dinner, and 4 tablets with breakfast, 4 tablets with lunch, and 4 tablets with dinner to be on a medium dose. And I might have to take 4 tablets 4 times a day to get a therapeutic dose.
That's 200 milligram tablets?
Yes, sir. Also, that medication, like all the arthritis medications, depends on building up a blood level, and it takes 10 days to do that. So if you're taking a low dose or not taking it long enough, it might not help you. On the other hand, it might help you if you did it a little differently. Resting can help in acute pain, but we don't want you down in bed rest for a long time because you'll get fat, flabby, depressed, and lose all the calcium from your bones. The knee to chest exercise, usually one leg alternating with the other leg and then both, is one of the exercises that's in all of the back booklets because it does tend to help people feel better for a while.
What was that last one? What was that? Describe that last exercise again, please.
That's the one you were doing where you're reclining and you bring your knee up to your chest.
Sometimes I move my leg round and round and then pull it forward, and sometimes I can hear a little click.
That's the second exercise that's in the back booklet. You've learned the hard way what to do. The exercise, if you want to go to the next level, is to bring the knee up to the chest that hurts on the left side and hold it for a second or two and then let it down. Bring the right one up in a similar fashion and then let it down so you're lying flat again. And then repeat the process by bringing both knees up to your chest. I think you'll find that may give you a little more relief than just doing one leg at a setting.
Well, that sounds good. I hesitate to take the ibuprofen after a week or so, and then I switched to naproxen, a heavier dose, and it elevated my body temperature so that I was having a reaction. So I quit taking that. I haven't been taking anything.
The leave may help you out, but of course quit taking it right away if it bugs your stomach. And there's nothing wrong with checking in with your primary care doctor on this one, because maybe getting a back booklet, maybe a session with physical therapy to tune up your exercise program, those kind of things could make a real big difference.
Well, I have contacted my doctor and went through the ibuprofen and the naproxen, and I have improved quite a bit, and I think he felt that maybe if I just lay off of the medicine for a while, it may take care of itself with some exercises, as you described.
Sounds good to me. Are you getting some cardiovascular fitness exercise, such as walking or swimming or bicycle riding as well?
No, I was thinking about getting on my exercise bike. I usually did get on my exercise bike, which not just pedaling, but back and forth with the arms for about 30 minutes a day.
Start out easy and gradually work back to it. Don't do 30 minutes your first time back.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what I was thinking about starting out with, and then he cautioned me about bending over. Sometimes I feel pretty good. I walk around, and then I bend over and pick up the paper, and I have pain shoots from the spot again.
Well, that area of your back is still sensitive. Get back with a walking or bicycle or exercise bicycle program, and I'll bet you'll be even better.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call. Well, we're going to have to stop. My apologies here. We have a couple of callers we can't take. Just one last point that I'm sure that you would say that you would suggest that if people were thinking about taking an over-the-counter pain medication, something like ibuprofen, and taking it at the therapeutic dose, which is a lot, probably would be a good idea to check with your doctor before you do that.
Certainly, it would be a good idea to check with your doctor or your doctor's nurse before doing it long term. If you're doing it for a few days to a couple weeks, 3 weeks, I don't have a problem with it. If you're doing it for longer than that, your primary care doctor should be informed.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being here.
It's always a pleasure.
Jim Harms, he's an orthopedic surgeon from Carle Clinic in Urbana. Our show, Focus 580, made possible in part by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. If you have already made a contribution to WILL this year, we thank you. And if not, please give us a call right now at 217-244-9455 with a gift. We still face known cuts in university dollars and some uncertainty in our federal funding. Simply meeting the fundraising goal that we set last July will still leave us with some tough budget decisions. Whether your contribution is $40 or $400, it will make a difference. Please call 217-244-9455 with a credit card contribution. The number again, 217-244-9455. And we thank you. That's where we will finish up here this morning on Focus, but we want you to stay tuned. Coming up, much more news, weather, features, other things, as part of the Afternoon Magazine. The host for the show, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Good morning. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll look at the role of women in the military. Our guest will be Carol Burke, author of a book on changing military culture, Camp All-American, Hanoi Jane, and the High and Tight. She joins us at 106. The National Weather Service in Romeoville has issued a severe thunderstorm warning for north central Ford County in east central Illinois and central Iroquois County in east central Illinois until 12:30 this afternoon. That's a severe thunderstorm warning for north central Ford County and central Iroquois County until 12:30. Let's take a look now at prices on the Chicago Board of Trade. July wheat trading at 3.28 1/4, up 1/2. September 3.39, up 3/4. July corn 2.17 1/4, down 1 1/4. September 2.27, down 3/4. December 2.37 3/4, down 3/4. And March corn 2.46, up 1/4. July soybeans 6.76 1/2, up 9 3/4.